Welcome to Beyond the Sirens, our podcast series designed for paramedics who are called to urgent palliative and end-of-life care situations. The aim of the series is to start a journey together, raising awareness of the holistic and complex needs of end-of-life care.
We want to support you in helping patients and relatives make the best decisions for those who are dying and for those left behind.
During the series, we have drawn upon the wisdom of seasoned experts in this field. We are committed to equipping you with the tools and insights needed to make a meaningful difference to the lives of the patients and those that they love. I am Mary Buttle, a registered nurse with extensive experience in the fields of oncology and palliative and end-of-life care, and a wealth of experience in teaching and training in these areas.
And I'm Tessa Taylor, also a registered nurse. I, however, have been in palliative and end-of-life care for a very long time. So for those of you who've heard of Florence Nightingale, we were classmates. During this time, I have also been involved in teaching paramedics. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 2, Top Tips for Communication Skills. We will be considering how effective communication skills can enhance your interactions with patients and their loved ones. In the first episode, Dan shared a really powerful example of an end-of-life care experience which illustrated the importance of using good communication skills.
I'm delighted to say that joining us today is Dr. Karen Groves, who is a physician in palliative and end-of-life care and has done lots of teaching and training in this topic and is based at Queen's Court Hospice. So welcome to you, Karen. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's lovely to be here.
So in today's episode, we're going to be reflecting on Dan's experience that was in episode 1. Karen, what communication skills do you think would have been helpful to assist him in that difficult situation he found himself in?
I think that it's very difficult for paramedics to be in that emergency situation with the adrenaline flowing to recognise that somebody is extremely ill, critically ill, but not in a way that they would normally find. They would normally be expecting to save lives.
Yes,
but they recognise that this person perhaps is not in a situation where their life is going to be saved. And then they ask the family and the patient, what's been happening? Where's the paperwork? What's the plan? And everybody looks blank. And they then don't know quite what to do. They can't imagine that nobody's had the conversations and they're beginning to wonder if they have. But because the situation is so stressful and so sudden for the patient and the relatives, it can appear as though nobody knows anything.
Yes.
And I think the key to this is thinking about the evolution of the brain, which sounds a bit off-piste.
Okay.
But I'd like to just take you back for a moment to the evolution of the brain.
Okay.
So initially, the lizard had just a brain stem and a cerebellum. And that only allowed three responses. Fright, standing still and doing nothing. Fight, going into an argument and fighting about it. Or flight, running away.
Yes.
So fright, fight and flight. When the brain developed a little bit more and we got a mammalian brain with a limbic system, then we got emotions and memories and habits and attachments and we could live in groups and look after one another. And then the human brain, of course, is huge in comparison. And it has all those fancy things in the neocortex, language, abstract thought, imagination, so you can think what might come next, consciousness, the ability to reason and rationalise. So we can do all sorts of great things and work out what's going on and what we should do and what might happen next. But when we are under stress, the connections to our mammalian brain and our human brain are temporarily disconnected. And we are only left with three responses. And those three responses are fright. We can't remember anything. We can't do anything. We stand still as if like a rabbit in the headlights. Fight, we go into battle with whoever's there and argue with them. Or flight, we run away from the situation because it's too scary.
Yeah.
And I know that paramedics will recognise all of those three responses because that's what they get. And in that situation, it's impossible. You don't get any sense in the situation. So what is it that makes a difference and allows people to reconnect to their mammalian brain and their human brain? And actually, it's being listened to. Oh. Being allowed to tell their story. There was a chap called General George Marshall. I have no idea who he was, but I guess he was in the US Army. And he had a formula for handling people. And his formula was, listen to the other person's story. Listen to the other person's full story. And listen to the other person's full story first. And that's often what we don't do. We might allow people to say a bit, but then we interrupt them. Or we try to fix it too quickly.
Yes.
And that doesn't give people a chance to tell their story. So there are three key questions, I think, in all of this. And it's about thinking about what has been happening. So yes. Tell me what you understand about what's been happening. Not what you know, but what you understand. Because if you ask, what do you know, it's about fact, and all you will get is fact.
Yes.
It may not be fact that anybody has a clue what it means.
Right.
But if you say, what do you understand about what's been happening, then you get emotion and fact.
Right.
And then, tell me how you feel about the situation now. So what's happening here in this place at this time, how do you feel about that? Not what do you think is happening, but how do you feel about it? And again, you will get both. You'll get feeling and fact.
Right. Yeah.
And then the third is tell me what you're expecting for the future. And when you use the term expecting, you are asking people to engage that human brain and their imagination in thinking about what might happen next.
Right.
And with those three questions, and people may be able to answer more on one than another, you get a really clear idea of what's been happening, what they understand about the situation now, and what they're expecting to happen next. So then you are able to adjust that or negotiate it, right, or ask them what evidence they've got for whatever it is. You know, you tell me that Mary's been absolutely fine up to today. Just tell me what's been happening over the last couple of weeks.
Wow. Yes.
Well, actually, she couldn't walk very well last week when I think about it. She couldn't get to the post office. Do you know what I mean?
So, yes.
So you get a much clearer idea.
Yeah. When you just said, Karen, about tell me what you understand, rather than tell me what you know, I think that has really registered in my brain to think. I think that's what we do. We go in and we ask for those facts. So what do you know? Expecting relatives to tell us what the diagnosis is, what the doctors have said. And we know, don't we, that in these situations, they don't always hear everything. They don't always know everything. So having that tell me what you understand has really hit home for me.
Again, it's the subtlety in the words that you choose to use, isn't it, that can make all the difference to gathering information.
Yes, yes.
It is. But although it's subtle, it is recognised by the other person.
Yes, definitely.
They pick that up. I think it's also important to remember that listening, the Chinese character to listen contains all that we need to listen, and it consists of five different parts. That Chinese character consists of the ears to hear, and we all need those, the mind to think and to interpret and to understand what's being said, the eyes to see those non-verbal communications, the heart to sense what the meaning is and the feelings and emotions that go with it, and the undivided attention in order to focus. And those are really important. All five of those are involved in that conversation.
Yeah.
Both for the paramedic and for the person to whom they're speaking, whether that's the patient or the relative.
Yeah. And so it sounds as though, in a way, you're sort of asking the paramedics to slow down when they go yes. into somebody's house, because we know that they get this call, it's a 999 call, they go out, they've got this one thing in mind to save lives, but actually explaining this sounds as if you were saying slow down and yes. listen and consider what is going on first.
Not only for themselves, because they need time to think about what's going on, but for the patient and the relative to reconnect those parts of their brain that will be able to tell them the story.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I think when you talk about the heart and how important that is when you're listening, it really reminds me of the fact that when we listen, we have to listen with a willingness to be changed by what we hear. Because we mm-hmm. could come with preconceived ideas about what is best, what we need to do. But when we listen, yes. they may change as we hear.
Yes. If I can just take a moment to tell you a little story that really, really tells that I read the other day. And it was a full train. This man was on the train and there was a man there with two children. And the children were behaving atrociously. They were all over the place. They were pulling people's papers. They were doing all sorts of things. And this man was getting really irritated and really wanted to have a word with this father. And he just said, I wonder if you could... He restrained himself. He said, I wonder if you could just ask the children to sit down. And the man looked at him and he said, yes, I suppose they should. Their mother's just died, but I suppose they should. And he said that that phrase completely changed the way he thought about the whole situation.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's made me go a bit goosey.
Yes, that's me.
Yeah.
But it just highlights about how we have to think about what might be going on, you know, why people are behaving in the way that they are, you know, and relatives, when they see the person they love is dying, then, as you know, everything goes out the window and they go into that panic mode, don't they? Into that yes. lizard brain that you were talking about. And I suppose really it's as paramedics and us, it's our role, our job to ask the right things, to slow the pace down, to ask yes. them to tell their full story first so that we can get a good understanding.
Yeah, and it's about empathy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So empathy is trying to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and imagine it from their point of view.
Yeah.
And you never can completely, but it's trying to do that, trying to listen for those cues and clues that will tell you what's going on and what somebody feels like and what its sense is like for them.
Yes.
Not sympathy, not feeling pity.
No.
But empathy.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, and very helpful. Yes, really made me think.
Yes, yes. I think it's very visual when you think, as you mentioned about the lizard brain, that's a very visual tool that you can remember. And again, about the hieroglyphic of what listen is, it's about engaging those five elements to listen effectively and the value of each of those elements.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we always say, don't we, the relatives know the patient best. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So listen to what they have to say. Yeah.
It's like having a mother bring a child in to see somebody, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can talk to the child, you can examine the child, but actually you need to listen to why the mother is concerned.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they know them really well.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Karen. I'm sure that's going to be really helpful. So just thinking then about the conversations that paramedics may have to have and how they are often presented with difficult questions. So, you know, could you give us some ideas on how they might answer a difficult question? For example, if the relative asks, is he dying now? Mm-hmm. How they might respond to that.
Yeah. I think the important key here is to think about what your response is going to do. So if you introduce information that is new or unexpected, you will shock the person, even if they've asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to try and get them to say whatever it is that you want them to understand.
Right.
So if somebody says, is he dying? I would say to them, tell me what you think is happening. Tell me what you feel is happening.
Right, okay.
Tell me what you're expecting. And it'll be really clear. They will either be expecting it and they can see what's coming, or they haven't got a clue.
Right.
And that's a much more difficult situation to be in. So if they're saying, well, I can't see him getting better from this. He looks awful compared to yesterday. And he's never looked like this before. And I'm really worried. Then as a paramedic, I would share my concern and I would say, yes, and I'm worried too. I think you're absolutely right. Mm. I think you're right in that he is likely to be dying.
Mm. Oh, right. So really the relatives are asking, are answering for the paramedics, aren't they really? Mm. Yeah.
For me, it's about gathering information before you give any information.
Yes.
Yes.
Get a real handle on what's there.
Yes.
In the
absolutely.
Room.
Yes.
So just thinking about perhaps another question the paramedics may be asked by a relative, and thinking again about Dan's case, how about if they say, can't we just take him to hospital, and the paramedic mm-hmm. knows that he probably won't survive, the patient won't make that journey? How could they respond then?
So again, if you just say, no, there's no point, that's not going to be terribly helpful because that's going to be shocking and won't be received well.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps to inquire as to what the relative feels is going to happen if they take them to hospital.
Mm.
You know, what are you expecting to happen from here? If we take him to hospital, what are you expecting the hospital will be able to do? What are you expecting the outcome of that will be? Mm. So asking all around it until they find out, and then maybe sharing, I'm not sure that that's going to make a difference in this situation, or that Fred may well not be well enough to make the journey to hospital, let alone receive treatment.
Yeah, yeah.
Those sorts of things, I think.
Yeah, I think those phrases are really useful, Karen, but what I'm also hearing is the tone of your voice.
Yes.
That gentleness, that warmth, that compassion, and that slowness in your pace of delivering. And I think that's very important to remember those skills as well, and not just the words.
And part of the reason for that is what we said about the Chinese character.
Yeah.
That actually what you're doing is speaking with something different to the emotions and the heart of the listener.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually conveying with a different part of you that this is really serious and this is not going to make a difference. The other thing is that if you respond abruptly or sharply or even matter-of-factly, professionally, that may be taken in a way that either demonstrates that you don't care or demonstrates that perhaps you think that they're being too expensive for the NHS and actually these resources are being better spent elsewhere. You don't know what people are going to understand by what you say.
Yes.
So it's really important that it comes across correctly and with the right terminology. Very clearly, you know, if you think someone is likely to be dying, then you need to use the term likely to be dying. You don't use the term poorly. Poorly is what your children are when you can't send them to school. It doesn't convey what we want to convey.
No.
Not using euphemisms is really, really important.
Yes. Yeah.
And saying what you see and saying what you hear. So if somebody looks very anxious, then say, you look really anxious. Tell me what that's all about. Or I can hear that you're really upset. Or I can hear concern in your voice. Tell me what that's about.
Yeah.
So you get more and more information from them.
Right.
And never, ever say, I know how you feel. because you don't.
No.
Much better to say, I can't imagine how this feels for you.
Yes. Yeah.
Or I can't imagine how you're coping with this.
Yeah. It's a real empathic response that can be so useful in those difficult situations.
Yeah. And, you know, you've just been talking about the sense and the feelings, the emotions of people. So, you know, how would a paramedic support those emotions? You know, if a relative gets very angry with them because they won't take them into hospital, mm-hmm. or becomes very distressed, you know, how would a paramedic cope with that?
Again, it's about listening. I think there's a difference between somebody who's very angry and somebody who's very distressed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But if we start with the person who's very distressed, let them talk, let them express that emotion, and let them keep doing it until there isn't any more.
Right.
So reflect back what they have said, summarise what they have said. So you're telling me that you've been really worried about her all week, and now you come and you find her like this and you just don't know what to do. I can't imagine what that's like for you.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit more.
Why?
Tell me more about what's been going on. And just encourage them to keep the story going until they've finished it, really.
Right.
And that the emotion will dissipate.
Okay.
With somebody who's very angry, you need to allow them to just get that out. What you need to make sure you don't do is wind up the anger.
Yes.
Because you don't want to increase it, you want to diffuse it.
Yeah.
So I can hear that you are very angry. Never say a bit angry, because that winds them up.
Right.
So I can hear that you're very angry about this, or I can hear that you're very upset about it. Use a different term.
Yes.
I can't imagine how this feels for you. Let's sit down and talk about what would be best in this situation for everybody.
Right. Okay.
And just let them talk again.
Yeah. Okay. Because quite often, I'm sure you agree, there's something that's driving these emotions, aren't there? You know, people are not naturally angry all the time or naturally crying all the time. There's something usually, isn't there, that's driving mm-hmm. that emotion yeah. that I'm guessing you're saying we need to listen for.
We do. And it may be that it's something like guilt. You know, it may be a daughter or a son who's been living at a distance, hasn't been visiting as often as they feel they ought to have done. Mm. They've turned up this Sunday afternoon and found that mum or dad is extremely ill, and then guilt really gets in the way and they think they've got to do something.
Yes, yeah.
And they want you to do something because they can't.
Yeah.
And that's a really difficult place for them to be.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah, very hard.
Yeah, definitely is.
So not easy for paramedics, is it?
No.
Going into somebody's home, they don't know what to expect. They don't know how the people they're going to be dealing with are going to be reacting. So very difficult.
Exactly.
So I think there's been some lovely advice there, some lovely tips on how paramedics may be able to respond in a different way to what they're used to.
For me, I think there's some real key points there that the paramedics can have in the front of their mind. So just saying what you see, say what you hear.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's something very simple that you can think about when you don't know what words to use.
Yeah. Having that empathy, that Absolutely. Empathic approach. Yeah. It's, what is it? Mary will know the name of the lady. I never know people that says empathy fuels the connection. Mm-hmm. So being able to connect with the people that they are dealing with,
It's all about relationships.
Yes.
Everything is about the encounter and the relationship and the rapport that you create. If people trust you, if you build confidence in the people that you are dealing with, you can ask them to stand on their head and they will do it.
Right.
It's really important.
Yeah, and for the paramedics, they've got to build that relationship and that trust up very quickly.
Very
quickly. With moments of entering that person's home.
Yes.
You know, so just their mere presence that exudes compassion and empathy is a first step, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the important bit there is about getting to the point, you know, recognising the difficult situation that people are in and acknowledging it very quickly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lovely. So that it doesn't appear that they're not taking notice of what's going on for them. I think the other thing that paramedics might wonder about is if people either don't speak their language or they have communication difficulties or the patient's maybe got dementia and can't communicate. And I think ideally, if the person speaks another language, the ideal situation is to get a professional interpreter. Or to use something like Language Line or one of the interpretation services on the phone. That's the ideal. But it may well be in a paramedic situation in the middle of the night that that's not possible. And they may have to use a family member. And that's fraught with difficulty.
Yeah.
Because the family member is also under stress and may find it difficult to translate what's being said, or may not want to because they don't like what's being said or what might come as a response.
Right.
So I think whether you're using a professional interpreter or whether it's a family member, I think the little clue for the paramedic is to say to the family member, I'm going to speak directly to Mary in this bed. I would like you to translate exactly what I say to Mary. And then I'd like you to translate exactly what Mary says back to me. But I'm going to look at her throughout this conversation.
Uh-huh.
And it's much more likely then that the family member will do what you ask than if you say, could you ask Mary whether she's got any pain or what she's expecting? That's more difficult for the family member. And the other thing is that because, as we said before about the Chinese character and the sense and the understanding and the undivided attention, you are then giving that undivided attention. You are listening, you are looking, you're using your heart to sense what's going on, but so is the person who is in the bed. Whether or not they've got all the skills that they need, they may not be able to hear and understand what you're saying, but they can see your non-verbal communication. Yes. They can sense your emotion and they have got their undivided attention on you and are focusing on you. So three out of the four things that you need to be able to listen are there.
Right.
And that's not the same if you speak to the family member who then speaks to them. Mm. So just a little key, whether or not that person's got dementia or hearing loss or difficulty speaking or whatever it is, or they speak another language.
Yeah.
Those other parts of the communication will still be there.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really useful. Karen. I hadn't thought about it in that respect, but that makes perfect sense to me now. And I can really appreciate the impact that would have and how helpful that approach would be in those challenging circumstances.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and that's not, I've not heard that before, Karen. I've always done, could you ask them this? Could you tell me that? I've never heard that.
Mm.
So that has been that's really powerful valuable. For me. Never mind the paramedics. Powerful for me, thank you.
Good.
Yeah. Karen, I've heard you mention a lot of questions there that the paramedics could use, but what I've noticed is all those questions are open questions. Tell us more about those, please.
Open questions are of much more value than closed questions. If we ask closed questions, we end up asking lots and lots of them, and they only give us a yes-no answer. But questions that begin with who, how, when, where, what, why, or just tell me, will give us loads and loads of information. And of all of those, the most useful are how, what, and tell me, because they're not asking for facts. They're asking for feelings and understanding and what's going on.
Lovely.
Really
thank
key.
You.
I don't think I ever ask a closed question anymore.
No.
And I think that's something for the paramedics to be so mindful of. You know, when you ask your question, just take that moment to make sure it's open so you can gather all that information that's so important.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You talk about these open questions, Karen, and you said you use them all the time. And I'm just thinking that this is something that, you know, really paramedics could hear. I practice communication skills on my family and on my friends. So, you know, if it's something that you're not quite comfortable with, practice those open questions, you know, until you get used to using them all the time.
And then hear the benefit of using them.
Yes.
What you gather from using that open question.
Yes.
I had a staff nurse who came to some communication skills training, and she said, "You're not going to believe this, but I've got two teenage children. And they come in every night and I say, 'Had a good day?' And they go, 'Uh,' and walk past."
Yes.
She said, "I went home last night and I said, 'Tell me how your day's been.' She said, 'And they talked to me. I can't believe it.'"
See, these skills do work. They do have an impact.
They do.
Well, thank you very much, Karen, for your time. I think that's been learning for Tessa and I.
Yeah.
So hopefully the paramedics out there listening will have found that very valuable too. I'm absolutely certain that they will. But before you leave, we've just got two quick questions to ask you, as we've asked all our guests on this podcast. Our first one is, what's your top tip for surviving a shift?
A sense of humour. No doubt about it. Make sure you laugh.
Yes.
Not at what's going on, but afterwards.
But yeah.
And knowing the paramedics, I think that they have got that sense of humour.
I think so. I've known many a paramedic in my time.
Yes. And then our final question to you is, what do you have in your lunchbox?
Cheese. What's as smelly as you
cheese.
Can get.
Oh, that's one of your favourites, is it? A smelly cheese.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, that will keep you going for the rest of the afternoon.
Indeed.
Yeah. Indeed. Oh, that's great.
Okay, so thank you very much, Karen, for your contribution to our podcast. It's been really enjoyable. I'm very grateful for your time. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Karen.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
We hope you've enjoyed the second episode of 6. Please share your comments via the link in the bio, and we look forward to seeing you in episode 3. We're hugely grateful for Queen's Court Hospice, EULP and Vista Healthcare for their support in putting this podcast together.
So it's a goodbye from me and a goodbye from Mary, and stay safe out there.